Well, thanks for sticking it out till the bitter end here. I want to give you a little bit of data from our long-term switchgrass and maize experiment as managed by USDA in Nebraska here. This is some long-term data, so I have to acknowledge all of my co-authors, Ron Follett, Liz, Gary Varvel, Kenneth Vogel, and Rob Mitchell, half of whom are blissfully retired at this point. So hopefully they're enjoying what they're up to. So basically, corn stover, as we've talked about, and Dr. Johnson gave us a great intro, is a really attractive feedstock for bioenergy. It's already implemented. It covers a large area. But there are concerns in terms of soil quality effects of the long-term removal of these residues. And so as an alternative, perennial bioenergy crops such as switchgrass could be grown on marginal lands and could potentially reduce greenhouse gas emissions and improve soil quality. We know for a fact that nitrogen management and fertilizer management are going to impact some of these below-ground processes, plant allocation strategies, but a lot of these things are difficult to document. So we take a first stab at it here. These are some results from Davis et al. 2012, and it shows the change in modeled greenhouse gas emissions by putting existing marginal croplands into bioenergy production, either continuing into the maize. So you've got a red or a source of greenhouse gas emissions. With Canthus, there's predictions for quite some soil carbon sequestration there with a deeper blue. But switchgrass, looks like there's not there, but switchgrass, both with and without fertilizer, can be either greenhouse gas neutral, or you could actually get some decrease in greenhouse gas emissions due to productivity with fertilizer. So we're interested in how long-term biofuel crop production management impacts soils. So we took some long-term plots from Mead, Nebraska, which is a rain-fed mesic system on silty clay and silty loams. And there was the study was established in 1998, switchgrass versus corn, explicit comparison with three different fertilizer rates and two harvest treatments in each, under each plant species. It ended up being a split plot design. So the nitrogen rates were 0, 60, 120 for the switchgrass, and in corn 60, 120, 180. The harvest treatments under switchgrass were a pre and post frost, August and October, and then residue removal or no residue removal of 50% in the corn. So we sampled in 98 and in 07, but in 07 we went down to a depth of 150 centimeters in those increments. We did a root separation with a hydropneumatic root washer, which basically involves live and dead, anything that was greater than 250 micrometers. We did four analytical reps per field replicate. And then we also did a physical fractionation that involved greater than 53 palm and smaller than 53 siltless clay. We ran total soil carbon, nitrogen, and 13C. And so some of the data that have actually been published before using these plots shows that this is the difference in soil organic carbon from 1998 to 07. And this is only for the top 30 centimeters. All of my graphs are going to go in the same order. So you've got switchgrass, no-till corn, increasing fertilizer rates, and then the dark bars here actually indicate the two different harvest treatments, August and October in switchgrass, and no residue removal and residue removal in corn. So the interesting thing here, after 9 years of the study, we found that, you know, at least in the top 30 centimeters, you have this increase in soil carbon, both in the switchgrass and in the no-till corn. There's no significant difference between the two. In addition, greater than 50% of the soil carbon was actually below 30 centimeters after 9 years. And you can see if you follow the middle lines in both cases, they're triangles. And a good chunk of that soil carbon that's been stabilized below ground is C4 related. So we were interested in below ground carbon. This is in 07, what we've measured, and you can see that there's about 4.5 times more carbon under switchgrass than there is in no-till corn. And you can see with the switchgrass under that 60 nitrogen addition seems to maximize below ground productivity. And then that bar on the right hand side, that's the October treatment. So you are getting significant allocation below ground. You can also see that there's a decrease in the residue removal treatments at 120 and 180 for root biomass in the entire profile. If we look a little deeper at the nitrogen management, that increase in root biomass at the 10 in the totals was due to the 10 to 30 and 30 to 60 in the 60 nitrogen treatments. There was no real effect of nitrogen on the corn, a modest effect, maybe all the way deep, but not necessarily comprising all that much biomass. In terms of harvest, you can see that harvest effect really comes out at the 10 to 30 centimeter depth, the October harvest having greater biomass there. And what's interesting in no-till corn, you've got a 40% reduction in root biomass in that 0 to 5 centimeter depth, and a concomitant increase in biomass at the 10 to 30. But because you've got so much more root biomass in that surface soil, it dominates that difference throughout the entire soil profile. So we're interested not only in the amount of biomass, but the quality of the biomass that's below ground. And here you can see that between no-till corn and the Cave and Rock switchgrass, you've got a significant increase in carbon to nitrogen ratio with the switchgrass. You can see that biomass, or the carbon to nitrogen ratio, increases with depth with both of them, from about 19 down to about 50 in corn, and then in switchgrass from about 50 down to over 100 at the deepest depth. And you can see in both species, there's a decrease in the carbon to nitrogen ratio with increasing nitrogen fertilizer rates, like you'd expect. So we can see that with a moderate fertilization, the 60 kilograms per hectare, and a post-frost harvest, increased below ground biomass in this particular switchgrass cultivar, and that after 9 years of residue removal, you actually have a 40% reduction in root biomass in the no-till corn, and that the management effects were, in general, observed in the deeper layers under switchgrass than they were under no-till corn. So this is our rough back-of-the-envelope calculation in terms of above and below ground carbon. And you can see that the below ground biomass under switchgrass comprises a heck of a lot of soil carbon. And this is something, or a heck of a lot of carbon. And these roots are very infrequently, they're infrequently measured and, to my knowledge, not particularly well incorporated into life cycle analyses. So it's potentially this big gap of carbon that's not being accounted for. And under no-till corn, you still have a fair amount of root biomass under the no-till corn. And if you're looking at me saying, well, this isn't quite a fair comparison, and you'd be totally accurate. Switchgrass, of course, is a perennial, so it's kind of apples to oranges. But if we want to make this even a bigger back-of-the-envelope calculation, switchgrass roots have a tendency to turn over every 3 years. So if we assume that they turn over every 3 years and that biomass is consistent, you've got an input that isn't really significantly different between the switchgrass and the no-till corn, which could help explain why, at least over the first 9 years of this study, we're not seeing significant differences in the increase in soil carbon between these two species. And we're not accounting for rise of deposits, so all of our measured values here, I would consider an underestimation by a lot of below ground inputs. So if we look at how this carbon is being incorporated into the soil, this is the particulate organic matter fraction. It turns over fairly quickly. you can see that there's no species effect between the switchgrass and the no-till corn, which is actually really interesting. And in at least in the Cave and Rock, you see an increase in nitrogen and a slight increase under the no-till corn, at least in the 0 to 5 centimeters. So I'm interested in the conversion rate in terms of some of this below-ground biomass into soil carbon into this palm fraction. And you can see that root carbon is very well correlated with palm carbon, at least in this system. So a primary input, of course, is the root biomass. But what's interesting is the slope of these two lines, that per unit of root carbon that's going below ground, you have proportionally more carbon being stabilized as particulate organic matter in the corn compared to cave and rock. Now, by no means does that mean that we're going to get more total carbon sequestration due to one or the other. What this is saying is that that conversion rate is faster right now in the corn compared to the switchgrass, which likely has to do with the increased nitrogen availability and the greater decomposition rate under no-till corn. So overall, we can say that switchgrass, at least here, has 4 times more root carbon and nearly twice the carbon to nitrogen ratios of no-till corn. This is a tremendous below-ground carbon biomass stock that is going to be fairly physically inaccessible to microbes. Moderate nitrogen in post-harvest maximized switchgrass root carbon, at least in this study. And that 9 years after the residue removal, we're seeing significant decreases in root biomass. So you're seeing a cut not only from the above ground biomass removal, but you're also seeing much, much lower below ground biomass input. So you're getting hit both ways. And the decomposition of no-till corn roots into palm was twice as fast as that of switchgrass. And so this has shown that nitrogen and harvest management, at least in this system, really alter below-ground carbon inputs and nutrient allocation, and that these effects directly impact soil carbon in this rain-fed mesic system, where we see deep rooting that's necessary for water uptake. And so in the future, it's going to be really important, despite using no-till, despite using our best management practices, doing the residue removal is going to have to be done very, very, very carefully so that we don't end up with long-term depleted soils. So I'd like to thank you all for hanging out, and I'll take questions. Yeah?
What are your ideas to why the roots, the switchgrass roots, are maximized at the
It is kind of curious, because you'd assume that there would be more, the plants would be able to put more below ground. I honestly think that it's an allocation question, or an allocation answer. I think they just, given the increased nitrogen availability, they choose above ground rather than below ground. So it's enough to get them going, but it's not too much to make them lazy, if you will. Yeah. Yeah.
I hadn't heard the fact that switchgrass moves over every few years. Is that the case for both coarse and fine roots, or?
You know, I'm not sure that they classified them between coarse and fine roots. It's some of the old work by the Weaver group.
I would just assume that they would turn over more quickly, especially with the fine roots.
It's quite possible, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
I was just curious, Kathy and Amanda, it might be tied up to the question, but why the carbon nitrogen ratio is decreasing for the roots as they go deeper?
As they go deeper? I honestly don't know why that is. I think it's also one of those plant allocation.
It could be related to that.
Yeah, and I'm not enough of a root physiologist to be able to give you an answer to that question, but we should ask Louise. I bet she'll know.